Penguin Random House Audio presents Trump, The Art of the Deal by Donald J. Trump with Tony Schwartz. Read for you by Kaleo Griffith with an introduction read by Donald J. Trump.
This is Donald Trump, and I do this in celebration of The Art of the Deal. In 1987, I wrote the opening sentences of my first book, The Art of the Deal. They go like this. I don't do it for the money. I've got enough, much more than I'll ever need. I do it to do it. Deals are my art form. Other people paint beautifully on canvas or write wonderful poetry. I like making deals, preferably big deals. That's how I get my kicks. That was almost 30 years ago, and I have to say that those words still ring true today. In fact, they're truer than ever. I am serious about our country's future, which is definitely a big deal, and I know we can make it great again. When I review this book from the perspective of my current situation, that is, running for the presidency of the United States, I realize that it provides a great primer for people to have a better idea of what makes me tick and why I have the experience required to get America back on track and do it fast. From growing up in Queens, New York, to reviving 42nd Street, to building Trump Tower and many, many other buildings, listeners will see a side of me alongside the negotiator that has brought me to where I am today. There's a reason this book has remained such a big bestseller, and that's because it's honest, exciting, and very, very educational. You'll not only learn a lot about me, you'll learn about making deals, negotiating, and how to get things done. Just what our great country needs right now. Enjoy the ride, and remember, think big.
Chapter 1. Dealing. A Week in the Life. I don't do it for the money. I've got enough, much more than I'll ever need. I do it to do it. Deals are my art form. Other people paint beautifully on canvas or write wonderful poetry. I like making deals, preferably big deals. That's how I get my kicks. Most people are surprised by the way I work. I play it very loose. I don't carry a briefcase. I try not to schedule too many meetings. I leave my door open. You can't be imaginative or entrepreneurial if you've got too much structure. I prefer to come to work each day and just see what develops. There is no typical week in my life. I wake up most mornings very early, around 6, and spend the first hour or so of each day reading the morning newspapers. I usually arrive at my office by 9, and I get on the phone. There's rarely a day with fewer than 50 calls, and often it runs to over 100. In between, I have at least a dozen meetings. The majority occur on the spur of the moment, and few of them last longer than 15 minutes. I rarely stop for lunch. I leave my office by 6:30, but I frequently make calls from home until midnight, and all weekend long. It never stops, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I try to learn from the past, but I plan for the future by focusing exclusively on the present. That's where the fun is. And if it can't be fun, what's the point? Monday, 9 a.m. My first call is to Alan Ace Greenberg on the trading floor of Bear Stearns, a major Wall Street investment banking firm. Alan is the CEO of Bear Stearns. He's been my investment banker for the past 5 years, and he's the best there is. 2 weeks ago, we began buying stock in Holiday Inns. It was selling in the 50s. As of this morning, Alan tells me, I own just over 1 million shares, or slightly more than 4% of the company. The stock closed Friday at $65 a share, mostly, Alan says, because word is out on the street that I've been a big buyer, and there's speculation I am planning a run at the company. The truth is, I'm keeping my options open. I may ultimately go for control of Holiday, which I think is somewhat undervalued. At the current stock price, I could get control for less than $2 billion. Holiday's 3 casino hotels could be worth nearly that much, and the company owns another 300,000 hotel rooms besides. A second option, if the stock price goes high enough, is to sell my stake and take a very nice profit. If I did that today, I'd already be up about $7 million. The third possibility is that Holiday may eventually offer to buy back my shares at a premium, simply to get rid of me. If the premium is big enough, I'll sell. In any case, I enjoy seeing the lengths to which bad managements go to preserve what they call their independence, which really just means their jobs. 9:30 a.m. Abraham Hirschfeld calls me, looking for advice. Abe is a successful real estate developer, but he wants to be a politician. Unfortunately for Abe, he's a far better developer than politician. This fall, Abe tried to run for lieutenant governor against Governor Cuomo's hand-picked candidate, Stan Lundeen. Cuomo led a court fight to get Hirschfeld off the ballot on technical grounds, and sure enough, halfway into the campaign, the court ruled Hirschfeld out. Abe knows I'm friendly with the governor, and he wants my advice now on whether he should endorse Cuomo or switch parties and endorse Cuomo's opponent. I tell him it's a no-contest question. Stick with a winner, and a good guy at that. We set a meeting for Thursday. 10 a.m. I call Don Imus to thank him. Imus has one of the most successful radio shows in the United States on WNBC. And he's been helping to raise money for the Annabel Hill Fund. I'm amazed at how this has snowballed into such a media event. It began last week when I saw a national news report by Tom Brokaw about this adorable little lady from Georgia, Mrs. Hill, who was trying to save her farm from being foreclosed. Her 67-year-old husband had committed suicide a few weeks earlier, hoping his life insurance would save the farm, which had been in the family for generations. But the insurance proceeds weren't nearly enough. It was a very sad situation, and I was moved. Here were people who'd worked very hard and honestly all their lives, only to see it all crumble before them. To me, it just seemed wrong. Through NBC, I was put in touch with a wonderful guy from Georgia named Frank Argenbright, who'd become very involved in trying to help Mrs. Hill. Frank directed me to the bank that held Mrs. Hill's mortgage. The next morning, I called and got some vice president on the line. I explained that I was a businessman from New York and that I was interested in helping Mrs. Hill. He told me he was sorry, but that it was too late. They were going to auction off the farm, he said, and nothing or no one is going to stop it. That really got me going. I said to the guy, "You listen to me. If you do foreclose, I'll personally bring a lawsuit for murder against you and your bank on the grounds that you harassed Mrs. Hill's husband to his death." All of a sudden, the bank officer sounded very nervous and said he'd get right back to me. Sometimes it pays to be a little wild. An hour later, I got a call back from the banker, and he said, "Don't worry, we're going to work it out, Mr. Trump." Mrs. Hill and Frank Argenbright told the media, and the next thing I knew, it was the lead story on the network news. By the end of the week, we'd raised $40,000. Imus alone raised almost $20,000 by appealing to his listeners. As a Christmas present to Mrs. Hill and her family, we've scheduled a mortgage burning ceremony for Christmas Eve in the atrium of Trump Tower. By then, I'm confident, we'll have raised all the money. I've promised Mrs. Hill that if we haven't, I'll make up any difference. I tell Imus he's the greatest, and I invite him to be my guest one day next week at the tennis matches at the U.S. Open. I have a courtside box, and I used to go myself almost every day. Now, I'm so busy I mostly just send my friends. 11:15 a.m. Harry Usher, the commissioner of the United States Football League, calls. Last month, the jury in the antitrust suit we brought against the National Football League ruled that the NFL was a monopoly, but awarded us only token damages of $1. I've already let the better players on my team, the New Jersey Generals, sign with the NFL. But the ruling was ridiculous. We argue about the approach we should take. I want to be more aggressive. What worries me, I say to Harry, is that no one is pushing hard enough on an appeal. 12 noon. Jerry Schoenfeld, head of the Schubert Organization, the biggest Broadway theater owners, calls to recommend a woman for a job as an office administrator. He tells me the woman specifically wants to work for Donald Trump, and I say she's crazy.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?